and I had 200 firefighters in the room. And to say, was I intimidated? Yes, it was interesting. You know, the definition of balance is about aligning your daily behaviors with your priorities in life. A common comment that I get is, I wish I'd have had this training early in my career.
Yeah. Right.
When we take care of our physical health, our mental health, our social health, and our spiritual health, if we put that first, a lot of other great things fall into place. Like we do really well in our career and we do really well in our families. This is Bobby and me at FDIC running the 5K after the 5K. I emailed Bobby a couple years ago out of the blue. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. I emailed him and sent him a link to my video of the workshops that I do for, have been doing for firefighters. Asked him if he had watched the 3-minute video. He watched it. And he said, this is awesome. Call me. We got talking and became friends immediately. It was a few months later, I met him at a conference. First time I got to hear him speak and hear what a powerful speaker he was. He goes, Donnie, no one's in the work-life balance swim lane and firefighting. You're going to be the guy. And he goes, don't lose sight of what you do. You are work-life balance. Don't get pulled in a bunch of directions. And I'll never forget that. And then one thing led to another. He was always in my corner. I got to see him again at another conference, and he gave me that handshake, gave me his personal challenge coin, and said, thank you for all the work you're doing. Led one thing to another, to writing articles in fire engineering, to last April being able to present at FDIC. During my presentation, he comes in. He says, I'd like to say a few words. And he's telling the folks in the room, the attendees, how important it is to heed this advice of work-life balance, to get your priorities figured out and to align your behaviors with those priorities, because many of us waited too long in our career to do so. So he's always been a fan, and he's been the biggest fan of every firefighter out there. And to Bobby, his family, may God bless them during this trying time. And all of us that were blessed to have known or become friends with Bobby, his legacy will live on forever. Thank you, Bobby, for all you've done for me personally. Thank you.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Donnie Hutchinson about work-life balance and wellness for first responders. I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Respond to Wellness, Inc., bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website at respondertv.com for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Dr. Donnie after this.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by Dr. Donnie Hutchinson. He's an Army National Guard veteran author, speaker, professor, podcaster, and work-life balance instructor who works with firefighters, law enforcement officers, and other first responders on self-care and work-life balance programs to improve their success at home, work, and in roles in life. Dr. Donnie serves as an instructor for FDIC, IAFC, and the IAFF. Donnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David. And thank you, Bonnie, for having me.
It's nice to have you here.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to jump right in with you and hear a little bit about your background. What got you interested in work-life balance and everything in the fire service?
How long do we have here?
3 days.
You know what? I realized that I wanted to live a balanced life in my very first career job, which was, I'll give a shout out to Xerox Corporation. So this goes back many, many years. But what it was is that I started observing people in their 40s and 50s doing things that we would do as young single people in our early, you know, mid 20s, going out at night, things like that after work, you know, just going out for a few beers, something to eat. But one thing led to another. I remember, I'll never forget, I asked this person, I go, "Hey, aren't you married?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm married." I go, "Don't you have children at home?" "Yeah, I have children at home." I go, "Well, what's your wife think about you being out all night with a bunch of single guys?" "Oh, she doesn't mind." And I'll never forget, I was like, that's not going to work out. I just know it's not. That can't be a recipe for success. So one thing led to another. I just, at that moment, I just realized, you know, I need to balance things. And then I thought, what do I want to balance? And I thought, well, for me, it was faith, family, career, and health. And so what ended up happening is I went through a career and was led several human resource organizations in the human resource organizational behavioral markets. And I led that way. I balanced my faith, my family, my career, and my health, did all that. And then I did it for my management team. And then I had them do it for the employees. And one thing led to another. It's like, hey, this thing works. You know, you can really be very effective at this. And then it was later, just sort of when I got, after I've in the process of getting my PhD in this work, I wrote a book about it called Lead with Balance. And then after that started, what happened was, is that the director of education, he's actually the chief of staff now for the International Association of Firefighters, the IAFF. He was the director of education at the time for their annual training conference. He read my book and he called me up and he said, "Donnie," he goes, "I love what you're doing here. Could you do it? Would you be interested in putting on a workshop for firefighters?" And I said, "I would love to." He asked me how I'd go about it. I told him what, you know, gave him the formula basically of how I do stuff. So the very first time I presented to firefighters was 7 years ago at one of the ALTS meetings. And I had 200 firefighters in the room. And to say, was I intimidated? Yes, it was interesting, you know, because I was in the huge conference room, you know, the huge room. And 200 people, and I went, I did my thing, and here I am today, 7 years later, you know, it's still doing it. I'm heading out to Caesar's Palace next month to do my 7th IAFF, you know, annual training. And it's just been such a blessing for me personally, but it's truly what I can give back out to them. And, you know, we'll get talking about what this work-life balance stuff really is, but that's a little bit of the background. It was all about, I lived a life of it. I wrote a book about it. It got in the right hands and then boom, here I fell into first responder. And I think I could always, I fit in well, one from military background, athletic background to also, I tell a story in my workshops of where I grew up. So I grew up in essentially you just call it the projects of a city. And I used to see the first responders down there, you know, especially in the summertime, 3, 4, 5 times a day, night, right? They ended up becoming the people that I used to look up to and go, "You are the normal people in the world. You know, you are the heroes." And I just wanted to get out of that neighborhood that I grew up in. But, you know, as a kid, you don't have much control over that. Anyhow, you know, I share with them how ironic it is decades later. And here I am later in life. Who am I out working with day in and day out? I'm working with the first responders, the same people I looked up to for hope, you know, back when I was that little kid. So it's truly rewarding for me.
And it comes full circle, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Yes. Yeah.
And I'm curious, like from that first room of 200 firefighters, where you were sort of new to the whole presenting to that culture, like what have you learned along the way? What kind of shifts have you made to talk to a room full of firefighters?
Yes, it is transitioning a little bit with younger firefighters coming in, you know, to the workforce and things like that, but. One key characteristic of all first responders, not just the firefighters, though, has been they really, when you're doing a workshop, they follow instructions very, very well. And that it sounds funny that people do that, but they really do. Compared, you can get into some other audiences like teachers or something like that, and they're off doing their own thing, but they follow instructions. So they're really good when they're in the workshop. You know, they participate because it's very interactive and all of that. But some of the things I'm finding, though, is that with the younger and I've written about this in some university textbook chapters on work-life balance about generational differences you know, that we're experiencing. And I'm sure this is not new news to you or probably many listeners out there is that, you know, with the younger workers and my son, he's a firefighter. He's 23 years old. Mm-hmm. Now he's a Army combat veteran. So he doesn't really fit this mold so much and he's single. So he'll pick up any shift he can,
right.
You know, which
right.
I tell him, you know, hey,
yeah.
This is the time to do it, you know.
Get it while you can.
But what I hear, though, around various departments is that, you know, that sometimes they struggle with when it's a volunteer for overtime, is that generally it's about the same 20-25% of the men and women are picking up those shifts. But it's usually the ones that are more seasoned that are picking up those shifts, which is further causing a strain on that work-life balance. Because they would love to share the overtime with others, but they need others to step up and take their share.
That's an excellent point. And it's the same way at my EMS agency. And we hear this a lot in our offices as well. They refer to it as the 10%, you know, like the 10% are doing all the work. I don't know what the actual statistic is, but I think that contributes to some of the other things that we all look at, which is burnout or compassion fatigue. So I think you're absolutely right in what you're saying.
Well, you mentioned earlier balance, and I think I'd love to steer into talking about what you do to help people achieve balance, work-life balance, and maybe what kinds of things you work with them on in terms of priorities and maybe aligning behaviors to achieve your life's priorities.
Oh, absolutely. And David, you hit it right there is that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about balance, first I try to, you know, I share with people, I said, well, let's first get an understanding of what balance is, you know, because it's not about equal time at work and home and pleasure and things like that. What I came out with my research a few years ago is the definition of balance is about aligning your daily behaviors with your priorities in life, as you alluded to there. And in the workshops and when I'm talking with people, a lot of times I'll say, hey, when's the last time you thought about your priorities in life? And most people are scratching their head going, I really never thought about it much. You know, and that then you know, they look back and they remember when their kids were just this tall and now they're this tall. And it's like, wow, where did the time go? Mm-hmm. And so when we get into balance, it truly is about balancing priorities in life. But first, we have to step back and think about what are our priorities in life. And I'll be the first to share with my audience that, hey, I'm not here to tell you what your priorities ought to be. You know, they should priorities ebb and flow all the time, you know, depending on what's going on in one's life. However, we do know from studying people that are nearing end of life that health and close relationships are considered two universal priorities. You know, we have them regardless of where you're at in this world. Mm-hmm. So when we step back and look at that, like that, right, that's where we get into that work-life balance. You know, when we talk about, for all first responders, you know, the health, the, and when I'm talking about health, I mean, not just physical health, but the mental health, Bonnie, as you mentioned, the compassion fatigue and burnout and all of that, not good things to go down, you know? So we want to focus on what I encourage people to do and what the models that came out of my research is that if we put self-care or how we, you know, how we behave when it comes to our health, when we put self-care first and we consider that foundational, as in, you know, we have to put that first. And when we do that, and what's coming out of the research more and more is that when we take care of our physical health, our mental health, our social health, and our spiritual health, if we put that first, a lot of other great things fall into place. Like we do really well in our career and we do really well in our families. And it's the beauty of it is that, wow, all we have to do is put ourselves first. However, as first responders, regardless of which badge you wear, putting yourself first is not in the formula, right? Public safety is in the give, and let's give more all the time. And even they take the oath, and this is one of the lines I use in my workshops. They take an oath to serve and protect their communities, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But they sometimes fail to recognize that they and their families are a part of that community. And they feel guilty about taking time to exercise, taking time to rest, taking time just for my family. They feel guilty about that. And sometimes then they don't engage in that. And then we all know what happens. The time, mm-hmm. you know, time clicks, and then they look back, and now they have regret and guilt and a health problem or a relationship problem. And then it's like, okay, Bonnie, that's where you come in. They then go to counseling to work on it. You know, so when I talk about like the work that I do in work-life balance, I try to share and educate folks on, hey, I'm here to help you shore up your priorities in life. Mm-hmm. I'm here to help you rediscover them. Mm-hmm. I'm here to help you put a plan together to align your daily behaviors with those priorities in life. And the whole concept is that I'm on the preventive side. I want to try to help you change before. Bonnie, I'm trying to put you out of business there.
You know what? If you put me out of business, I would be so happy because it means all the first responders are well.
Yeah.
So game on, okay?
Okay. You know, it's about that, right? It's about that preventive. Let's shore it up. And I think, you know, it the workshops do a really, really good job by the data that I've been gathering on pre and post tests and things like that. But if we... A common comment that I get is, I wish I'd have had this training early in my career.
Yeah. Right.
If I can share my experience and help just one person or help one person help somebody else, that's what it's all about.
We're trying to break down the stigma. We're trying to share that there are great, effective resources out there.
Vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else.
And as police officers, we always want to go in, see problem, fix problem. And you can't do that with a mental health crisis. You have to see person and connect with person.
This sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace this suck. You know, I don't like these cards, but these are the cards that I've been dealt, and I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years.
This is one of the real premises of this podcast, is to get the word out to first responders to be healthy starting now. But we're really pushing people to be preventative. And so what you're saying is, if people are told this at the beginning of their career, in your son's age bracket, they're more likely to understand what that work-life balance is, because how things go now, and it's very unfortunate, but like you said, there's a health problem, there's a really big mental health problem, a family issue. Now, Stacy and I are seeing these people on the back end, and this is when they're learning they need a work-life balance, when it's too late. So we would much rather see people have this in the beginning and understand what it really means to themselves.
Absolutely. I know it.
Well, that's one thing that's really, I don't think, emphasized enough when responders are getting into their career, is that not only are they making a commitment to serve the people of the community that they work in, but then there's also the department. And like you said, Dr. Donnie, there's the overtime shifts and, you know, the responsibility to kind of pick up your, you know, pick up your piece of that. There's other commitments outside of regular work hours, in terms of perhaps it could be a Memorial Day parade or some mm-hmm. other union activity. And there's an impact to the family, and there's an impact beyond just working those shift hours. It's really a bigger commitment than what it seems like on the outset. So how would you sort of recommend somebody be proactive to manage all that and then still have a good balance with a home family life?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think as a department, we need to work together. For example, my son came down for Thanksgiving. I'm in Florida. He's in Cincinnati. He came down for Thanksgiving. He's not coming down for Christmas. And I did not even have to ask him this. He picked it up on his own, or he listened to previous things I've talked about. But I go, "What are you doing on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day?" He goes, "Well, I'm picking up shifts for the guys that have families and the ladies that have families." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Awesome. I'm very proud of you." You know, and I think that's that how that crew works together. You know, they're helping each other. And I know a lot of crews do that. But I think it's something, though, that we can also, we need to do more of. We need to make that part more of the culture. Hey, we're in this together. Let's help each other out. Just as if you see the same person volunteering for the Memorial Day parades and the, you know, doing all the extra stuff, they're going to get out of balance. There are all these things that they generally volunteer for, or committees and all of that. They're very, very good causes, very worthy, right? But we should all share as a department in doing that. And then that gets into, you know, leadership. Yeah, you know, and mm-hmm. and what's the culture of our department? You know, what's it look like? Mm-hmm. You know, is balance of things, is that part of the core values? And it's very interesting. My son interviewed for a department. He's trying to get closer to the South here, and he goes, "Do you know anything about this department?" I said, "No," but so I looked him up. And they had a vision, mission, and core values. Mm-hmm. The number one core value of this particular department was balance. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. I was like, "Wow, I need to call that chief up. I want to get to know that chief." You know, it's so, you know, I think it's about sharing, and we need to look out, just as we do. You know, we look out for each other so much on the scenes, and that's whether you're, you know, you're on the engine, you're on the ladder, but you're at the fire scene, or whether you're on the ambulance, or whether you're, you know, getting ready to bust the door down in the house,
right,
going after the bad guy. We work in teams. We constantly are watching each other six. Let's take all those wins that we do day in and day out. You know, we're very good at that in operational. Let's see if we, what can we learn from that and have that spill over into the other areas, the committees, the volunteers, and, you know, the other things that just make us so busy out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to your point, it comes down to the leadership largely as well. Like, what are they modeling for the agency? What are the expectations? And how are those things laid out for everyone? I just finished a 2-year leadership role in charge of my EMS agency. I'm Captain COVID, if you will. I can't really shake that name. but, you know, I tried to be very, very conscious, obviously, of the work-life balance. And as the leader, it's much, much harder to really, really achieve that and attain it and model it. But I tried to do that by having boundaries for myself, right? There were times where if I went away or if I had a dinner to attend, you know, I would communicate, I am out of service this evening. You can mm-hmm. contact these three people, but this is my time for myself or my family. You know, so I think just being a mental health professional and seeing what I see on my end, I tried very, very hard to model that behavior. And I'd like to think that it made a difference and that people really mm-hmm. thought about it. Or if someone got up on a Saturday morning and was doing checkout at 6 a.m., maybe they thought to themselves, oh, maybe I shouldn't call about this issue right now. I'll wait till 9 o'clock, you know, things like that.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. I think it just means that everybody has to be more thoughtful of that balance. And even if they don't really feel they need it for themselves, how are you contributing to the people around you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you did that.
Thank you.
That's like, yeah, very practical, concrete step to initiate first care. I mean, for self-care for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that simple thing, piece of going out, you know, you're off, you're with your family,
right.
And okay, I'm going to be out of commission here for 2 hours.
Right.
Then I'll check my text.
Exactly.
But that way you have the opportunity then to get fully engaged as you did with your family yeah. and situation. And what we're really talking about here, if we really think about, right, that was a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And doing what you did can lead to more successful outcomes because you don't have, yeah, as we know, if our family life, regardless of your profession, is not good, it's going to weigh you down in your career job.
Right.
Now, people can shake their head. No, it doesn't bother me. Well, we know that's just a defense mechanism, right? We know it does. So when we think about success, and that I try to instill in all the first responders, is I'm talking about sustainable success. You know, we're talking about success, not just now, but in the future. And oh, by the way, how about that retirement life, right? Because as we know, regardless of which side of the badge that you're wearing, when it comes to retirement, the length of retirement that they live is not as high as what, you know, the general population is by any means, right?
Right.
And the relationship strain, the health strain, and all that. So I think, and what do we hear from people when we're in front of people? Oh, I've got 5 years to retire. I've got this, I've got that. You know, it's like they work their whole careers just to retire, yet that's a challenge. And I know you're going to do an episode probably on the retirement piece, that because that is such a large transition and something that, wow, it sure is helpful if they start looking at it well in advance.
We've been working on probably a two-part documentary style episode where the more we drill into this subject, the more we're finding how important it is and how overlooked it is in the course of a responder's career, especially when it could be addressed right at the beginning and then throughout. And there's so many ways we see that departments can take a role in that. And obviously the responder themselves can be proactive in doing everything they can so they do have a enjoyable retirement with their family as part of the picture and mm-hmm. financially, you know, as sound as possible. So, yeah, Donnie, it's something that needs to be talked about more, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Absolutely.
When it comes to occupational cancer exposures, members of the fire service are some of the highest risk professionals nationwide. Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposures, also known as the FACES Foundation, is an advocacy organization established to bring awareness, resources, and peer support to responders in need of additional help in battling potential cancer diagnoses or critical concerns. The FACES Foundation was established by a national alliance of first responders to offer supplemental resources for firefighters. One of its core initiatives is cancer awareness in the form of prevention and early detection, supporting vigilance about occupational cancers and cancer recurrence through our national Get Checked Now campaign. Also, the FACES Foundation publishes a major public catalog of resources for the many areas of need, including information on clinical and mental health therapies, benefits and compensations, funding sources and financial strategies. For more information, please visit the FACES website at facesusa.org.
You know, you sparked another thing in me that I've heard in my office or in the world is that some first responders, their retirement is based on those last couple of years that they work. And so forget work-life balance because they're trying to work as many hours under their belt so that they can base it off of that income. And when you think of what that does to people, you know, they're at the end of the career after seeing and doing everything they've done, and now they're kicking it into overdrive. I wish we had data on what that does.
Oh, well, if you just think about it, and I've had I know exactly what you're talking about. I've talked to many, and sometimes, depending on their family situation, but if they have, I'll never forget the one. He had a son playing high school football. And I said, well, how much do they need to pay you to miss those Friday night football games?
And he
just sat there. He was at a conference. It was Thursday. He was at the conference. He goes, excuse me. He got up and he left. He went home. He was at a conference that was voluntary. You know, similar situation about the pay, but and it was just a little bit. It's like, you know, sometimes if we remind folks of, hey, what's important in your life? And then if they have families, what's important in your children's life? Mm-hmm. Do they need you? Do they need parents? Do children today need parents? Well, no one knows that better than first responders by what they see out in the communities, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
They need parents. And how are we doing with that? And that's where I know exactly what you say, you know, chasing the dollar, but at the end of the day, how much does someone need to pay you to give up your health or to give up your family?
Right. And kids grow up. At some point, they're going to be college age and moving on with their lives. You just cannot put a price on those years when they are young and needing to have a role model like a father or a mother who's, you know, so important to them. So, it's a critical piece.
Didn't we just have this talk, David, last week? We're working on this. We're working on the 2-part episode of retirement. And, you know, we have a lot of footage and things to go through and hone in on. And I said to David, hey, you know, my part's going to be slow because this is holiday time. And your kids are only young once. So I'm trying to really put that first for myself. You know, it's hard because there's a lot of feelings associated with those boundaries, right? There's guilt or, oh, someone else is picking up my weight. But you know, when I thought about what I said to David, then I thought, well, but David's kids are grown up and he's okay with it, you know, and it gives you permission. I think people need to hear it from us. They need the validation, the permission, but they need to also be okay with taking permission for themselves. And I'm not perfect at it, but I practiced it last week. And so it can happen. I felt it was very freeing.
Yeah.
Very freeing. And, you know, awesome. So it's possible. It's possible for all of us to do that more.
Yeah. But I'm sure it can feel like a difficult decision when you're trying to decide between going to your son's soccer game and, you know, picking up another shift or, you know, doing a union function when, you know, it's almost like a being, you know, pulled in two different directions and trying to figure out, you know, it's who do you choose in that scenario? So Dr. Donnie, what kind of advice would you give someone who's, you know, kind of wrestling with that situation?
Oh, it really gets back to the whole piece about what are your priorities at the given time. Mm-hmm. You know, for the person that's picking up the extra shifts, first thing I say, ask them is, do you need the money? Mm-hmm. And there could be some, not do you want the money, you know, right. But do you need the money?
Right.
And there are very legitimate times where I need the money, you know. And then there are other times, well, I'm just trying to pack it into my income to increase my retirement. Okay, but let's get back to the price tag then of what are you going to miss? And, you know, even like, you know, for myself, as I'm on the road now, my youngest just went to college this past fall. So I have the flexibility to become much busier, be out on the road more, because mm-hmm. my wife can join me on any of them that she wants to go. But having that high schooler I had two girls at home just 2 years ago. They're just a year apart. You know, I had to balance that whole piece. But at the end of the day, it's like it was a balance, because did I make it to every event of theirs in high school, sports, or, you know, extracurricular events, at parent night? No, I didn't make it to everyone, but I made it to some. You know, it mm-hmm. and I think that's, and I look back at it and I've talked with them about it. They're happy with that. You know, it's like, you know, okay, they know dad's got to work, but dad has flexibility too. They know that. They know, right. I have flexibility too. And they saw how I would balance it, or say, hey, when's a track parent night going to be in the spring? Do you know? Find out for me. So I'll try to block that off my calendar, you know, and not be out of town. So, and I think it's the same for all first responders. It's just, you know, don't go overboard in one way or the other. Right. And boy, will you feel better, as you just experienced yourself, Bonnie. And we know they'll feel better too.
Right. You know?
Doesn't mean you're not going to be like, wow, I wish I would not have missed that, you know, event, because you're at one, you're not at the other, you know, but at least you are feeding both of these needs in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think you're much better off, as we realize from the data that we are better off that way.
I think for the children of first responders, the effort is what matters. It's not always the end product, because there will be some things that are missed, or they get dragged along to the station while you have some meeting or something to fix. But, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, I think the kids, from what I hear, they judge the effort. You know, if my parent can't be there, are they doing some kind of reparative talk with me after to let me know that they wanted to put the effort, but they couldn't this time? Or that something happened that was a priority, because there are those things too in police, fire, EMS, where, you know, if the rig is broken and your crew is stranded, you know, that's going to have to take precedence that day. But I think there's so much going into that effort piece with family, with the kids and the spouse, that if you're just communicating, that's even better than what a lot of people are doing now.
Absolutely.
You know, they just bolt out of the door and you don't even know. But I think, you know, with therapy work, it's rupture and repair. And the repair part is so important to people. So if you rupture and you need to leave and it's quick, when you come back, have that talk, put the effort in. Because I think that's what you're going to be measured on in the end.
Yeah. I also, you brought up a good point, Bonnie. There are those, maybe not very often, but once in a while, there's an opportunity to bring your kids to something involving your job. It could be, I brought my kids to, say, a meeting, union meeting, or to swearing in ceremony. And there's been a few choice times when, you know, I could have said, well, you know, just leave them at home. But I wanted to just take advantage of every opportunity where they could be, you know, with me and be part of the job, like to really show them the positive parts of the job, so they didn't feel like it was the thing that was taking their dad away from them so much, but also they felt like a little more involvement in it, a little more connection to it. Mm-hmm. So you can pick and choose those as well.
Oh, that's a great point. You're giving them a snapshot, right, into what's really important to you. Doesn't mean it's more important than them, but I think when they see it and they see the people, they understand more.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation, a public trust supporting first responder health and safety through prevention and early detection of cancer.
I'd like to share with you a quick story from a friend of mine. You guys very well know him as well. Frank Lieb, chief of training out at FDNY. He shared with me, when he would study for the promotional exams, which, you know, a lot of studying going on for those, right? Yeah. He told me, I'll tell the short story. He would have his children who were in a lot of sports at the time and always at practice or at a game, he would have them read chapters into a recording device. And then he would go to their game or practice as he was rising through, going through the ranks. And he would listen to his children reading the chapter so he could take it in and keep listening it over and over while being at the game.
That's brilliant. You know?
And he goes, and then when my son got up to bat, you know, I hit the pause and really focused. When he wasn't up to bat, I put plugs on, I'd walk around the baseball field. And I thought that was awesome. And then he did exactly like you were talking about, Lieutenant, is he'd bring his kids and his wife to the ceremonies and all of that. But I just thought about how he brought it together. It's like, hey, we can do two things at the same time. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to just say, I'm going to be at home and study for this.
Yeah.
It was important to him. And I loved his example of that.
That's a brilliant way to get the best of both worlds at the same time.
Yeah, you have to be creative when you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Dr. Donnie, this has been an amazing conversation. And please share with us where people can find you out there on the internet, social media.
Oh, absolutely. The website is Donnie with an IE, DonnieHutchinson.com. And then Instagram, LinkedIn is Dr. Donnie Hutchinson on Instagram. And then LinkedIn is Donnie Hutchinson. So one of the, either Dr. Donnie or Donnie, depending on whether I took that social media piece after my PhD or before.
Nice. And besides the IAFF event, is there anything else going on that you want to share about?
Well, I'll be in a couple weeks at the FDSOA, the Fire Department Safety Officers Association meeting in St. Pete Beach. We're a ton of just outstanding researchers our fire administrator, Dr. Laura Moore Merrill, will be there. Great speakers. I'm co-presenting with Chief Todd LeDuc, retired, on a wellness piece with him. Let's see, we have that. I've been doing the FRI every year, so looking forward to doing that again. Mm-hmm. And then here's a new one. I'm going out to Renton out in the Seattle area in March. One of their chiefs, this was a couple years ago, he went to one of my alts, you know, IAFF meetings or workshops. And he saw me there. So now he's bringing me out to the Seattle area. We're doing a couples workshop. So I'm really looking forward to not just a person, because in my workshops, they get a workbook and they leave with a plan, you know, how to take them from point A, their current reality, to point B, their desired future. They build a plan on how to get there. And now we're going to do that with couples.
Great idea.
So I'm really loving that. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
See, let us know when you put that guest list together. We might add some people.
Also, I want to give you a shout out for your podcast, one you do with Todd as well, right? You want to speak about that?
Yes, it's the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. And then I'll interview someone, or I'll do a short 20-minute educational piece on something to do with work-life balance and self-care. And then on Thursdays, Todd brings on a guest, and then we interview someone. And it's always along the health and wellness line, in the fire service on his side. And for mine, it's all first responders out there. But that's been we love doing that. And that led into me doing a short newsletter called the Get Balanced newsletter each Wednesday, Get Balanced Wednesday. That'll be released later this afternoon, but I put one out every Wednesday, and just a short, simple read. and it's all, it's all in the effort, though, whether it's podcasts, social media, or newsletters, is just to try to keep some of these concepts that we hear, right? And ideas, trying to keep them top of mind with the first responders out there. Cause, as I share with so many people, it's like, I'm pretty good. If I have a goal and I keep it front and center, it's like, I look back on my track record, I'm pretty good at achieving those goals. But it's those things that, sometimes 6 months will go by and I'll look over my shoulder and I'll go, what happened to that idea? Why didn't I implement that? And I was like, oh, I didn't keep it top of mind, front and center. My track record on that is when I don't do it, it's pretty poor. So I've learned is that I think it's helpful, and based upon the feedback, it is helpful. Trying to keep this stuff top of mind, because we all need to be reminded, right, of what's important in our lives, and step back, take some time for reflection and check in with ourselves and be honest with ourselves. How are we doing with this? Whether it's being a spouse, being a parent, how are we doing with our health and things that we don't talk about much, as people or first responders, how am I doing with my thought life? How am I doing with my drinking? Some of these things that aren't necessarily real popular, but can be very damaging. Yeah. So, it's trying to keep that bug in their ear a little bit, top of mind, just so that they can think about it and make their decisions based upon their priorities.
Well, great stuff. Thanks for all you're doing out there for work-life balance and setting priorities and self-care, and wish you continued success.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you, Dave, and thank you, Bonnie, for having me on the show. It's been quite enjoyable.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation.
I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and our website is respondertv.com. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.